Hello, everyone. And Lynn Johnson, I'm wondering if you will also be available in about 55 minutes to play a song at 55 after our time. I will go and get Nirmala. Yeah, and I'll turn the mic over to you so you can play a song while I go and get him. Thank you. So for those of you who don't remember, in an hour we're going to have satsang with Nirmala. And Nirmala is very gentle, quite interesting, quite clear, and I don't know, I think you'll enjoy Nirmala, but the only way to find out, I guess, is to come. So yeah, if you can be here in an hour for satsang with Nirmala, that would be wonderful. Typically I start with a song, and again, I like to use the song just to set back and be still for a moment. I like to pick a song that's not too long so that I still have time to teach. let's see what we have here. Well, here's a song. This song's a little different than the ones I usually play, but it's kind of showing up for me. So it's the song I'm going to play. It's by Kansas, and it's called Hold On. And we'll listen to it for a little bit while we just be still, and then we'll come back and look at the seven steps.
Hold on, baby, hold on, 'cause it's closer than you.
So we are here to look at the seven steps of awakening. We're going to be starting with number 632A. And I've just posted that link in the room. The quotes in the seven steps to awakening right now are coming from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. And this is quote 632. This diversity arises on account of mental modifications, and it will cease when they cease. And of course, by this diversity, it means the diversity of the world. This diversity arises on account of mental modifications, and it will cease when they cease. So only the interpreting mind can really see diversity. Why don't we go ahead and look at the journal? Number 632A says, notice how mind's thoughts change. They are never constant. The variety of thoughts that come into the mind seem innumerable. This wide variety of thought makes the wide variety of world. Your tolerance, interest, and desire to be entertained by thought makes the appearance of the world with its full variety of experience, good and bad included. Whoops. Are you guys able to hear me? I'm getting errors here from Pal Talk. No, I guess not. I guess that answers my question when Pal Talk just closes up. All right, can you guys hear me? I got kicked out of the room by Pal Talk. Okay, good. Good. It's wonderful to be back. I'm not quite sure when I left because I wasn't looking at the screen. So let me just start by reading 632A again from the journal. Notice how mind's thoughts change. They are never constant. The variety of thoughts that come into the mind seem innumerable. This wide variety of thought makes the wide variety of world. Your tolerance, interest, and desire to be entertained by thought makes the appearance of the world with its full variety of experience, good and bad included. Well, maybe some of you have had something going on with you that's so constant that you can remember a year ago today, the day after Thanksgiving, a year ago today, the thoughts that were in your mind, the things that were concerning you, the things that were capturing your attention. But I'm guessing that most of us cannot remember. Most of us cannot remember whatever it was that was catching our attention a year ago. And whatever is catching our attention today was not there a year ago. And this, of course, is because the mind is always offering something different to capture our attention. Just like this journal entry says, the thoughts in the mind are innumerable. And the world is the reflection of those innumerable thoughts. And you know, each of us has a a bit of an experience of the world, but we can't even fathom the totality of the experience of the world. This afternoon, I spent my afternoon looking at war. And I was actually at the movie theater. I was watching, I think the name of the movie is American Sniper. Maybe you've heard of it. And it's an interesting movie because it really gives us a perspective, and again, another little perspective, a tiny perspective, of what that point of view of like was like, what it's like to maybe be at war. And last night, I guess I was at war again last night, because last night I watched a documentary of, it was around a year or so ago when the West Gateway Mall in Nairobi, Kenya was taken over by terrorists who shot a large number of people. You know, I was listening to the interviews of the people who survived that incident. And probably some of you know that I've really been looking at war now, I guess, pretty consistently for at least a couple of weeks. And it's interesting to look at war. It's interesting to look at war and to realize that this experience that most of us don't live through in this current lifetime, but certainly others, you know, we'll call them our brothers and sisters, are living through. And on both sides, you know, if there's two sides, on all four sides, if there's four sides of a battle, you know, at every angle of the war, our human siblings are living through it. And of course, we also have people who are living through, you know, famine and starvation, and just all kinds of things are happening in the world that, in a way, we're very protected from in our American environment here. And it's really interesting to look at all of that and to realize that all of that comes from the ego, every bit of it. And then it's interesting to look back in ourself and say, why do I tolerate the ego then? And that's where this journal entry and this quote is pointing to. Again, the quote says, this diversity arises on account of mental modifications, and it will cease when they cease. You know, what tiny little judgments show up in your mind? Or maybe great big judgments. Maybe you have judgments that you would perceive as great big judgments. And why do we choose to believe these judgments? I think part of the reason, and I think I talked about this last week, I think part of the reason that we believe them is because we're not as aware of the effect of the ego. I don't know how to finish that sentence. I don't know if "as we could be" is an appropriate ending. We're not, maybe I should just say we're not aware of the effects of the ego and just stop there. You know, as I mentioned, I think I said something like this last week, if I had a little judgment thought about a person, about my neighbor, and then a big explosion happened, and then I believed another little judgment thought about something else, and another explosion happened. I mean, pretty soon I might really catch on when I start seeing all of the horrors of the world happening, boom, 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 as quickly as I believe a judgment. I might catch on, and I might is the key word in this sentence, I might decide to relinquish those judgments. I might not enjoy seeing the direct relationship between my judgments and these things in the world. But somehow we're protected. We We don't see directly the effects of our judgment. We don't even know what's out there, and if we did, we would not believe that it's because of our judgment. And yet, as far as I can tell, you know, I've been looking at a lot of spiritual teachings over the last couple of years, ever since we've started Awakening Together. I've been looking at the Bhagavad Gita, the Tao Te Ching, Sufism, Kabbalah, Jesus of the New Testament, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, A Course in Miracles, Buddhism, and they all seem to say the same thing. They all seem to have the same teaching, that this world, this diversity, it comes from our belief in our thinking. And so it's interesting to contemplate war. It's interesting to go and see a movie like The American Sniper and watch that experience, because that's what that movie is. It's an experience that people are living through. And to realize that that experience is painted onto a blank canvas by my everyday judgments. And then to kind of ask, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it? You know, one of the things that happened in this movie, and the thing about this movie is it's not a fictional movie, right? It's a what they call a true life story. One of the things that happened in this movie was an Islamic militant, I think he was associated with Al-Qaeda, if I remember correctly, an Islamic militant was upset at a family who talked to American soldiers. And so he took a drill and he took a young boy from the family and he first tortured the boy in front of the family with the drill and then murdered the boy in front of the family with the drill. And we were blessed in the movie in that they didn't really show it that graphically. In quote, real life, it would have been much more graphic than it was in the movie. This movie was a little gentle on us. To contemplate that all of those appearances come from me tolerating unimportant judgments, judgments that, you know, the ones I made a year ago, I can't even remember today, right? They're not important. They're not important. They come and go. They change all the time. I would say they're not worth it. They're really not worth it. So why do we keep tolerating them? Why do we keep believing them? I mean, some of them we give our passion to. Haven't you given your passion to not liking a particular person before? Would you give your passion to not liking a particular person if as soon as you had that thought, you saw a little boy being tortured by a man with a drill? And if you knew that was the direct result of the judgment you just had against somebody about something that probably really wasn't that important anyway? I remember last week I played a part of, I played an excerpt from Revolver. think I'd like to play that excerpt again because it's really a wonderful excerpt. It's wonderful to listen to. It's wonderful for us to realize that there is a connection between our meaningless judgments and what appears in the world. So why don't we just listen to this again? This is from the movie Revolver by Guy Ritchie.
What is the first rule of any game, Mr. Green?
The only way to get smarter is by playing a smarter opponent.
What's rule two of any game?
The more sophisticated the game, the more sophisticated the opponent.
Harmless to saying, but where does it stop, Mr. Green? Where does this game stop?
It stops when you start to give me answers. Don't let them play head games with you, Jake.
Is it me that's playing head games with you, Mr. Green? You've heard that voice for so long, you believe it to be you. You believe it to be your best friend.
They should believe their opponent to be their best friend.
Where's the best place an opponent should hide?
The very last place you would ever look.
Do you know who Sam Gold is, Mr. Green? You should. Because he knows who you are.
Sam Gold is the ego.
Sam Gold.
Mr. Clandestine. Mr. Ambiguous.
Mr. Mystery.
He's all up here. Pretending to be you.
No one sees gold. But gold sees everything.
You're in a game, Jake. You're in the game. Everyone's in his game. And nobody knows it. And all of this... This is his world. He owns it. He controls it.
I've had enough of this shit stuff to do my head.
Tell me
that
enough. He tells you what to do.
Look, that's enough.
And when to do it.
Tell him.
I said that's enough, Abby!
Eventually, when the opponent is challenged or questioned, it means the victim's investment and thus his intelligence is questioned. No one can accept that. Not even to themselves.
We can't accept it.
He's behind all the pain there ever was. Behind every crime ever committed.
How can I be behind all the pain, all the crime? I don't even exist.
And right now, he's telling you that he doesn't even exist.
No one lives. And this place is gold.
No one but your two friends.
We just put you to war with the only enemy that ever existed. And you. You think he's your best friend.
And they will protect their best friend. With everything they've got.
You're protecting him, Mr. Green. But with what? Where's the best place an opponent should hide? In the very last place you've ever looked. He's hiding behind your pain, Jake. You're protecting him with your pain. Embrace the pain. And you will win this game.
No. Nothing hurts more than humiliation and a little money loss.
I'll stop it there. But... You know, some of the important points about that little excerpt from Revolver is that, you know, I was asking, why do we tolerate these judgments in our mind, these judgments that are the cause of all of the suffering in the world? And the answer is because we believe our mind is our best friend. If my mind tells me, you know, that so-and-so over there, is in between me and what I want, in some way, and then starts, you know, tossing judgments at so-and-so over there, I believe it because I think that's me. I think that's my best friend. I think it's trying to make me happy. I think it's trying to get me what I want so that I can be happy. I am willing to hate and judge along with this mind because I believe that it's going to make me happy. That's nonsense. That's nonsense. If we look, it just requires looking. If we look, none of us are ever truly happy when we're judging. I remember I said that to a friend once, and she said, that's not true. You know, there was somebody that I guess she thought she loved hating. And that friend, I watch her on Facebook, she still seems to do a lot of a lot of that. But I think that even if that's the case, if we seem to believe that we love hating, I think that, you know, we aren't really looking carefully, because I think that that feeling, that self-satisfaction maybe is what we get when we think we love hating. That sense of self-satisfaction is not really happiness. Happiness is cleaner than that. You know what I mean? Happiness is freer than that. So even if we believe that we love judging, believe that we love hating, I think that we just haven't looked carefully enough. If we look carefully at that feeling, that is not happiness. Again, today's journal entry, which is 632A, says, notice how mind's thoughts change. They are never constant. The variety of thoughts that come into the mind seem innumerable. The wide variety of thought makes the wide variety of world. Your tolerance, interest, and desire to be entertained by thought makes the appearance of the world with its full variety of experience, good and bad included. All right, I'm going to scroll down and click on 632B. And again, the quote that I'm looking at is by the Supreme Yoga. And the quote is, this diversity arises on account of mental modifications, and it will cease when they cease. So here's 632B. Thinking, attached to the world as home and body self as I, so thinking sees the world as home and sees this body personality self as me, right? Thinking, attached to the world as home and body self as I, thinks. If the world comes from thought, think only good thoughts and make for oneself only a good world. This is what thinking thinks. So when thinking starts to accept the spiritual teachings that the world is made by thought, you know, thinking doesn't think, then let's let go of thinking. Thinking thinks, but then let's think only good thoughts. Let's think only good thoughts. And that way we'll have only a good world. Thinking, attached to the world as home and body self as I, thinks, if the world comes from thought, think only good thoughts and make for oneself only a good world. This idea does not come from honest observation of the mind. Mind's thoughts, when allowed to persist, mutate and change incessantly. As long as mind is given tolerance, evil and bad will persist in the world. Mind cannot be altered to picture only good, because mind's nature is change. To know true goodness, which is absolutely natural, resolve within the heart not to tolerate the wanderings of mind. And of course, it's so easy for us to look at spiritual teachings from an individual point of view, because we look at everything from an individual point of view. So spiritual teachings are no different. So when we start talking about the world comes from my mind, we think, you know, each of us thinks, you know, my mind, me, you know, this individual. But that's not true. And if I start trying to create a good world from this individual's perspective, it's never going to work. Because what this individual would define as a good world is different from what someone else, possibly raised in a different culture with a different set of values, would define as a good world. If somebody on the other side of the world with a completely different set of values from me started thinking only good thoughts to create a good world, and I started thinking only good thoughts to create a good world, chances are a large number of our thoughts would be in conflict. And again, that's still, you know, we're only talking about two people here, but that's still the one mind, right? My thoughts and her thoughts are still the one mind, which means even if I could be very, very consistent in my thinking and she could be very, very consistent in her thinking, there would be conflict in thought and there would be conflict in the world. Thinking is not the answer. Thinking is the problem. And when I say thinking is the problem, I'm not talking about using the mind as a tool. You know, using the mind to balance a checkbook, using the mind to read a book, using the mind to, you know, look at something that you're putting together and figure out how to put it together. That's not really the problem. That can be pretty benign. That's just using the mind to have a human experience in that case. You know, a dog uses its mind in certain ways and a human uses its mind in certain ways. I'm talking about the chatter, the judgments specifically, the interpretations, the opinions, the beliefs. Thinking attached to the world as home and body self as I thinks. If the world comes from thought, think only good thoughts and make for oneself only a good world. Again, that would only be from an individualistic point of view. This idea does not come from honest observation of the mind. Mind's thoughts, when allowed to persist, mutate and change incessantly. I had told my story a moment ago as if me and some other woman on the other side of the world, as if we could be consistent in our quote, thinking of only good. And I said, because we're from different cultures, our ideas of only good would probably be different and therefore our thoughts would be in conflict anyway, right? But what this is saying is you can't be that consistent with thought anyway. You can't think only good. Thought just doesn't do that. The nature of thought is change. Thinking attached to the world as home and body self, as I, thinks. If the world comes from thought, think only good thoughts and make for oneself only a good world. This idea does not come from honest observation of mind. Mind's thoughts, when allowed to persist, mutate and change incessantly. As long as mind is given tolerance, evil and bad will persist in the world. Mind cannot be altered to picture only good because mind's nature is change. To know true goodness, which is absolutely natural. Resolve within the heart not to tolerate the wanderings of mind. To know true goodness, which is absolutely natural. Resolve within the heart not to tolerate the wanderings of mind. It's really mind that needs to be relinquished. I'm going to scroll down and click on 633A. And 633 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, as long as one clings to the notion of the reality of you and I, there is no liberation. Not by merely verbally denying such a notion of existence is it obliterated. I don't know when Yoga Vasistha lived, but I think it was a very long time ago. And what I think is kind of funny about 633 is I think that, you know, we've all seen or even experienced directly ourselves, us doing it, people who try to avoid words like you and I, you know, try to avoid that language. And Yoga Vasistha is saying just by verbally, you know, denying these ideas, that's not enough. That's not enough. So just changing our language to a spiritual sounding language, that's not enough. We have to look at what we're really clinging to in the mind. I remember somewhere in the teachings of Inner Ramana, it says something about the one who does not say I. And yet that one is still kind of judgmental, maybe judging other people who does use the word I, you know. I am spiritual enough not to use the word I, but I see you using the word I all the time, and so I'm going to judge you. I think there's some joke about that, too, that I've heard. I wish I could recall the joke. But the joke is something like maybe I'll say there's a Jewish rabbi and a Catholic priest and an Advaita master all gathered together. They're all studying the same spirituality and they're gathered together and the rabbi says something like, there is no other, there is no me. And I'm probably ruining the joke, some of you who know it. But the priest then, he's contemplating, and then he suddenly says, there is no other, there is no me. And then the Advaita master is meditating, and finally he blurts out, there is no other, there is no me. And there happens to be a custodian nearby that's sweeping up the temple or the church that they're in. And he's observed this. And so he throws down his broom and he screams out, there is no other. There is no me. And the rabbi kind of elbows the priest and says, look who thinks he's not a me or something like that. some silly joke like that. But that's how silly we get. You know, that's why that joke is out there, is because we do that crazy stuff, right? We get so caught up in the spiritual ego, I'm the one that's, you know, arrogant enough. Of course, we don't see it that way, but I'm the one who knows there's no others. But that person over there doesn't know it, right? I'm still going on with my judging mind. You know, that's silliness. That's silliness. It's just silly to play games like that. Number 633 says, as long as one clings to the notion in the mind, as long as one clings to the notion of the reality of you and I, there is no liberation. Not by merely verbally denying such a notion of existence is it obliterated. So let's have a look at the journal 633A. Intellectual acceptance that the world is not real and all is one is not enough. One must practice patient and persistent non-judgmental intolerance of mind. That's interesting, at least to me. One must practice patient and persistent non-judgmental intolerance of mind. You know, we can't do this by judging ourselves as we do it. That doesn't work. That's still judgment. We have to be able to notice when we have gotten caught up in the mind again and be willing to step away from that without judging ourselves. Just every time we see ourselves caught in the gravity of mind again, because it is like a gravity, we get kind of pulled in. Just every time we notice, just step away. Non-judgmentally, step away. You know, I use words like don't tolerate, and those sound like very strong words. And they're strong in that the commitment is strong. The commitment that we make to ourselves not to tolerate mind wandering is a strong commitment. But the way in which we do not tolerate mind wandering has to be gentle. It cannot be judgmental. I cannot chastise myself for believing judgments again. I have to be honest, see it, and then once again gently step away. Right? In NTI Galatians, it calls it the dance of willingness. The dance of willingness. Because, you know, when you're dancing, right, you kind of take a step forward and you take a step back and you take a step forward and you wave your hands and you take a step back and, you know, so it's like a dance because we get sucked in the mind and then we step back again. We get sucked in the mind and then we step back again. But every time we step back, something happens, a little miracle. Inner Ramana describes it as like imagine that we're connected to the mind by a rope that keeps drawing us back into the mind again. Well, every time we step back, it's like that rope gets scratched by a razor blade. And if we really catch ourselves a lot and we keep stepping back a lot, if each time that rope is getting scratched by a razor blade, eventually that last thread is going to get scratched, boom, the connection's going to break, and we're never going to get pulled into mind by that rope again, right? So if you get sucked into mind 1,000 times a day, and you pull yourself back 1,000 times a day. Now what mind will want you to do is judge yourself because 1,000 times you got sucked in again. Right? That's how mind is. But the right mind would rejoice because 1,000 times you stepped out again. So even that can be looked at with the ego or with the right mind. Either I suck because 1,000 times I got sucked into mind wandering again, or there's just this lightness and maybe even gratitude because 1,000 times I noticed that I got sucked into mind and I stepped out again, right? How are you going to look at it? It's kind of like the cup half full or the cup half empty point of view, isn't it? Which one are you going to choose? The judgmental way of looking at it or the non-judgmental way of looking at it? Again, 633A says, intellectual acceptance that the world is not real and all is one is not enough. One must practice patient and persistent non-judgmental intolerance of mind. I'm going to scroll down and click on 633B. 633B says, non-judgmental intolerance of mind means this. With the purpose of heart and with devoted love, choose not to accept, which means believe or entertain, the mind's changing stories of difference anymore. Non-judgmental intolerance, intolerance of mind means this. With the purpose of heart and with devoted love, choose not to believe the mind's changing stories of difference anymore. Do not believe difference anymore. You know, how do you look at the man with the drill who's torturing the little boy with the drill and not believe difference? I'll tell you, you can't look at it with the mind. If you look at it with the mind is going to have its chattering opinions and judgments. That's what the mind does. And I think this is the mistake that a lot of people make. Even though we talk about letting go of mind, they try to somehow let go of mind with mind. It doesn't work. Can't do it. I can't look at the man with the drill torturing the little boy and use my mind to see that he's not different than me. I have to leave the mind behind. That's what this is all about. I have to shift out of the mind, leave the mind, relinquish the mind. And there's no thinking that needs to happen in the heart. The heart doesn't need to think and figure out how that man and I are not different. It doesn't need to justify his behavior in order to finally convince myself that we're the same. The heart just sees differently. It doesn't think at all, not like the mind thinks, but it sees differently. And when you're outside of the mind and you're seeing with the heart, you see differently. That's the point of all of these teachings, is the mind isn't going to get you there. The mind needs to be abandoned completely. Don't think about how the truth is true. Leave the mind behind and discover. Find out. See with the heart and see what the heart sees. Non-judgmental intolerance of mind means this. With the purpose of heart and with devoted love, choose not to entertain the mind's changing stories of difference anymore. All right, let's scroll down and click on 633C. Time dedicated to watching awareness undoes the unconscious habit of being entertained by mind's changing thoughts. Well, I'm certain that one thing that we've talked about before here as we've looked at the seven steps is that thinking is like an addiction. You know, a moment ago I used the word gravity. Gravity that keeps pulling us back into the mind, right? But that's, you know, that's the same gravity of any addiction. Right? I love the Buddhists. Call it habit energy. I think that's a great description. It's a habit energy. You know, I may have an addiction to chocolate or potato chips, or I may have an addiction to TV, or I may have an addiction to alcohol or getting high. But no matter what my addiction is, you know what my greatest addiction is? Of course you know. The greatest addiction is getting lost in thought. And even a person who can brag no addiction at all likely has that addiction. And if you've ever had an addiction, then you know it took some kind of attention, some kind of effort, some kind of willingness to transcend the addiction, to get to where you weren't addicted anymore, right? And so we need something to help us transcend this addiction to thought. And of course, one thing that is being recommended here is time dedicated to watching awareness. Literally setting aside time in the calendar, in the daily calendar, to set back and do nothing but watch awareness. Time dedicated to watching awareness undoes the unconscious habit of being entertained by mind's changing thoughts. And again, this is important because what we've seen is that believing mind's changing thoughts, and of course, if we're addicted, we're in there believing them. Believing mind's changing thoughts is the cause of all suffering in the world. If we say we're not in favor of the suffering, we're not in favor of the evil in the world, then why are we in favor of being lost in thought? And thought is the cause of all of those appearances. It's not logical. Well, it is, because even though we may all talk about the fact that there's a connection between our thoughts and the appearances of the world, the truth is we don't believe it. It's like Helen Schuckman said. She said, "I know it's true, I just don't believe it." Sounds like a crazy thing to say, but I think that's probably true of nearly everyone, if not everyone here. We can talk about it. We can talk about how the world is the reflection of our thoughts, but we don't believe it enough to stop believing our thinking. We don't believe it enough to put time in our calendar and set watching awareness and break that habit of being sucked into our thinking again. We don't even believe it enough to be honest with ourselves about how addicted we are to thinking again. We prefer to pretend like we've transcended that. We prefer to pretend that we're more spiritual than we are. It's really quite a joke. And as my friend Debbie Ritchie would say, and it's not the ha-ha kind of joke either. Time dedicated to watching awareness undoes the unconscious habit of being entertained by mind's changing thoughts. All right, let's go to 633D. I just remember I need to end a little early so I can go get near Mala. So let's look at 633D. Notice when an idea's sole purpose is to further engage attention with mind. Realize that idea is not in one's best interest. With heart devoted to purpose, choose to ignore that idea. I call these hooks, something that will hook us into thinking. Somebody says something and we think, oh, was he really talking about me? Was he trying to say that I'm blah, blah, blah? And pretty soon there's a whole story going. You see, the sole purpose of that first thought, was he talking about me, was to further engage our attention with the mind. The sole purpose of that first thought was just to get me sucked in again. Start noticing that that's the real purpose of these storylines. Just to get me paying attention to the mind. And then remember with the heart, I've decided not to pay attention to the mind. And be willing to leave the hook laying there untouched. No matter what that hook is.